Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106.3, the game, streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live. We are live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios. It's a Vandy Monday on the program after Vanderbilt took down number one Alabama on Saturday. Head coach Clark Lee will join us in 20 minutes right here on the flagship for Vanderbilt Athletics, 102.5, 106.3, the game. And I couldn't help myself. You know, a lot of these politicians, I don't know if you guys have been getting the ads. You know, I like the Atlanta Braves, so when I'd watch them, there was an ad every inning for president or whatever. But these political ads are running all the time. They're all doing news interviews, and it wouldn't surprise me if we end up having to have somebody on or something. I don't know. But one thing I've noticed over the years of following politics is that usually the thing that a politician gets up there and says, and if you vote for this person, they will. A lot of the time, they're basically telling on themselves. The thing that they're telling you to be afraid of, they're doing themselves. It's happened so many times. And it reminded me of something on Saturday. A couple of years ago, Nick Saban made a bunch of headlines in college football when he went after Texas A&M for all the NIL money they had and all the players they were buying. Jimbo Fisher went off and had an unhinged press conference, which led to all this Saban-Jimbo drama. And I'm pretty sure Greg Sankey, but somebody over at the SEC tamped that down. But Nick Saban started on his campaign against name, image, and likeness in the transfer portal. Didn't like him. Told Paul Feinbaum in 2022, quote, one of the things I'd like to see us to be able to work back to is everything in college football has always had parity, Saban said. I don't think we had that balance right now, which could affect the parity of college football and college athletics as a whole. I know we've got a lot of good people working on it, and I'm sure they'll come up with a good solution. Nick Saban was worried about parity in college football. Now, let me say this. Before NIL, before the transfer portal, we did have a parity problem in college football. It was the same five teams. Alabama, Ohio State, Clemson, Georgia, and then one year with LSU that had an unstoppable team. That was it. And it didn't look like, based on the recruiting rankings, it didn't look like it was going to change anytime soon. Number one recruiting class, Alabama. Number two recruiting class, Georgia. Number three recruiting class, Clemson. It didn't look like it was going to change at all. And so here was Nick Saban, with his team having dominated college football for 15 years, and he's sitting here telling everybody, well, I'm worried if we don't get this fixed, I'm worried about the parity of college football. But I don't think Nick Saban actually was worried about the parity of college football. I think Nick Saban was worried that parity could become a thing in college football. Because all of a sudden, if the Vandys of the world start getting the money that the Alabamas have, and Vanderbilt can go offer a player more money, well, now Nick Saban's lost his recruiting edge. And I think now we know Nick Saban's fear of parity in college football? Yeah, the opposite has happened. I think the reason why Nick Saban said that when he was still coaching Alabama was because before NIL and before the transfer portal, now he had worked hard to make this a reality, but before those things, he had the deck stacked in his favor. And if you've got the deck stacked in your favor, you don't want that to change. The reason we have parity in pro sports is because pro sports, for the most part, is treated like a socialist government. The best teams end up getting the hardest schedules, right? Like Kansas City has to play Baltimore and Buffalo and Houston and every year. The worst team gets the best pick. So if you're Cincinnati and you're terrible, you get Joe Burrow. Congratulations. There are salary caps, though some are real and some are not. Baseball has a luxury tax in which if you spend too much money, it hurts your draft picks. Those are socialist governments. What those do is they basically expect everybody to be 500. And then there are teams that are poorly coached and there are teams that are not. But that's why we have that in pro sports. And that's why the Washington Commanders can be the second worst team in the league last year and be one of the best this year because they got Jaden Daniels. For years and years and years, college sports wasn't a socialist government, but it wasn't even capitalism. It was a caste system. And if you weren't one of those caste members, if you weren't one of the tops of the tops, you either had to pay your way there or cheat your way there. Oregon paid their way there with Phil Knight's money. Other schools might have cheated their way there if you weren't Alabama or you weren't Kentucky basketball. Well, now Vanderbilt has money. And with that money, Vanderbilt went out and they got Diego Pavia. By the way, and I'm going to do this. I'm not a no free shout outs guy. You know, some of these people are like, hey, we don't give out shout outs on the show. You got to advertise for that. I'm not doing that, Ian. Diego Pavia sent out a tweet like an hour and a half ago, and he said, for NIL inquiries, hit my agent. And I'm going to give away the phone number, 505-544-7267. So Vandy's got money now, and with it, they bought Diego Pavia. And with Diego Pavia, they bought a ball player. And now a team that was never, ever, ever a threat to Nick Saban just scored 40 points and beat Alabama. Saban knew his recruiting edge would be hampered significantly because while he was always competing with Georgia and LSU and A&M and Clemson and, you know, while he knew he was recruiting with the top of the SEC, he also knows Arkansas's got money now. Like Arkansas has as much money maybe as anybody else in the SEC. They've got the Walmart family behind them. Ole Miss, Florida, those schools have money too. And so Saban's got the boosters exactly where he wants them. They've got the finest facilities, the finest program, and with no transfer portal, Nick Saban can tell Derrick Henry, you need to sit on the bench. But today, with the transfer portal, four games in, these guys go to the coach now and they say, I'm out of here. He didn't like that. When it comes to paying the players, he knows there's only a certain amount of money we can give out at LSU. And so if we spend our money and we get the best wide receiver and we get the best pass rusher and we get the best corner, well, that means somebody else can buy the best safety and the best running back and the best right tackle. And he knew it. He knew it. He knew that his days of going out and recruiting the best players and saying, come to Alabama, and even if you sit on the bench, it'll be okay, because it was okay for Quinnen Williams, and it was okay for Derrick Henry, and it was okay. He knew that those days were over. I mean, here we are 5 weeks, 6 weeks into the college football season. Who's the best team in the SEC? Everybody will tell you it's Texas right now. Texas hadn't played Georgia. Texas hadn't played Bama. Texas hadn't played UT. And I can't tell you who that best team is. And the reason why I can't tell you who the best team is, or who the best four teams are, or who the best five teams are, is because we now have the parity in college football that Nick Saban was scared to death of. And that's why it's no accident. You know the old saying, you can't teach an old dog new tricks? That's why Coach K, out. Roy Williams, out. Nick Saban, out. These guys don't want to deal with NIL and the transfer portal because they had it made the way it was. And now we're starting to see, right now we're in the phase of capitalism in college football. Socialism is when there are real rules and everybody's supposed to be the same, and that's what all these other sports are, the pro sports. Capitalism is the rich get richer, and then the poor have got to earn their way up and everything else. which I think is why we're seeing Florida State and Clemson try to sue their way out of the ACC. But again, I'm sorry. Nick Saban was scared to death about parity 2 years ago. And the parity he was scared to death of was it entering college football. And Saturday proved that it has. Phone lines are by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Let's hit them quickly. Adam in Portland is up next here on Vandy. Adam, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, Jared. So my thing, man, and I haven't talked to anybody about this. I'm out of town working, but had the thought in my head the other day. I was like, what if I look up and see the Vandy score and just see him up a couple of touchdowns? What would I think? I swear it come into my mind maybe Friday. And I looked up and I saw that they were up 23-14. So I immediately go to Twitter. I saw your post saying that might be the best half of football Vandy's ever played. I was like, oh, my God, what am I missing? So I wasn't tuned in. That's the best sporting event I've ever seen in my life. I have not been able to take the smile off my face since that happened. I'm so happy for Vanderbilt. I've spent a whole lifetime of seeing them get crapped on. I used to watch them when Woody was their coach and they sucked and Bobby Johnson was their coach. Everybody just laughed them out, man. Like, talking about them, they need to leave the SEC because they suck so bad. Clark Lee needs to get paid, dude. Like, they need to lock him up before he does the James Franklin thing and rolls out. I hope he doesn't. Ask him if he's going to do that. But, like, what an incredible team, an incredible coach, man. Like I said, I can't wipe the smile off my face. It's the happiest I've been ever with something sports. I'm just so happy right now.
Adam, good call. Thank you. Let's go to Billy, who's up next here on our program. Billy, thank you for waiting. Go ahead.
Hey, what do you say, Jared? Quick observation before my comment. My observation is I listen a lot, don't call often, but there's not too many shows go by that we don't hear the fact that how much you miss Floyd and love him, and we do too, good. So just to know that. I can't tell you. You don't need me to tell you how exactly right you were with everything you said about parity. You hit every nail on the head. The only thing I would add is that as a fan that throws a few dollars every now and again, it's making it tougher to bet because there's so much parity amongst college football. But I'm a 100% fan of it, and I think it's fantastic for college football.
Thank you for your call, Billy. I mean, we'll see how this new 12-team playoff works. I'm not sure I'm a huge fan of it. We'll see. But does seem to make it at least a little bit more interesting. You know, Feinbaum said a couple years ago on TV, he said college football is going to try to be like the NFL. That's what they're going to try to do. And that's what they're doing. 14-team playoffs, and everybody's got good players, and you don't know who's going to win. I think that's kind of the hope they have. All right, the man of the hour, Clark Lee, joins us next. Vanderbilt's head coach, 2 days after the biggest win in program history. Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106 through the game.
He takes the snap.
That's going to do it.
Vanderbilt.
Biggest win in Vanderbilt history.
Is this real life? You bet. Vanderbilt beats Alabama for the first time in a generation. The greatest moment in Vanderbilt football history.
Pretty exciting Saturday, wasn't it? Vanderbilt, 40 points on Alabama. And every time Alabama punched, Vanderbilt punched back. And we are joined by the man of the hour, the head coach of the Commodores, Clark Lee, joins us now on the program. Clark, I know there were a lot of ups and downs throughout the first 4 years in order for you to get this program here today where you did. But I got to start with this. First of all, congratulations. But I got to ask, when did it start to get real for you? When did you start to sit out there and say, we're going to beat Alabama? When did it hit you? When did it start to become real on Saturday?
Well, you're not going to like my answer, so just bear with me. But, it was real to me from the opening kick. Part of it is like, you know, like, I don't know, man. I love my team. I got a ton of belief. Now, we got to play a certain way. And when we've synced up and played like a physical, tough, and interlocked game where all three phases are kind of supporting each other, you know, I think we've been really, really dynamic. And when we haven't, you know, that's where we have the poor performances, which we're capable of too. But for 2 weeks, this team was like so dialed in and excited. In the past, I've had to like really serve as like chief motivator at times when the world tells us we're punching up. With this group, these guys aren't fazed by anything. And so I think they seized the opportunity to have the number one team in the country coming in. We took the field. We had two great weeks of prep, took the field with energy and spirit. And I think at the time at which, you know, you always as a coach want to start well. I think it's important to start well, especially in a game of that magnitude. So to be fair to your question, I think as we were driving that first drive and I realized that we're getting movement and we're establishing run, we were able to convert a couple of third downs and protect. That gave me some peace. And then, you know, when we punctuated with a touchdown, you know, I could just sense that this is going the way we want it to go. And obviously we come out in a three and out with a pick six. I think at that point it's like, let's freaking go. Obviously, you know, there's going to be punch counter punch. You know, there's going to have to be some battle back at times. And against a good team like that, it's not always going to be perfect, but these guys were ready to go from the start.
As a defensive coach, you're running that defense now, you give up 35 points, but you got the big strip sack at the end of the game. And I was listening to Miles Capers' interview with Kev after the game was over on the postgame show, and he basically said, like, we knew we had to make a play, you know, for the offense, given the way the game was going. You've coached a lot of different kinds of games. Did you say something to the defense on the sideline when you knew that they had had the big touchdown with Ryan Williams and then you guys had answered back? Did you say something along the lines of, hey, we need one big play here, or we need to do something to break up Alabama's momentum? What was that like that led to what I thought was probably one of the most important plays at the end of the game?
Well, again, we had talked all week. Part of our big three for as a team was this punch counter punch, which just means, like, you know, we have to sync up at the right times. They're going to get their plays. You know, the touchdown to Ryan Williams, if you look at his stat line, I thought we did a good job against them except for one snap. And The one snap, you know, we played a ton of zone. We knew we were going to have to absorb some yards in the passing game. That was intentional. But the one snap was a third down where we played man, and he made a really nice play on our sideline. Had we been able to down that ball, I think we would have been in position to limit him throughout the night. We didn't make the play on the sideline, and he got loose. I felt like on the whole we were playing according to the plan we had. We wanted to make him go the long, hard way. There's still so many things we want to do better. But, you know, I didn't need to give any motivation in that moment. I was, you know, this is what we trained for. I mean, you know, these guys are inspired to play together. Miles Capers is as steady and consistent as any player I've ever coached. And, you know, he went out there and won his one-on-one. He won it emphatically. And then, you know, we train every day to attack the ball in the pocket. And he did just that. And we were able to pounce on it. And it was huge. I think, you know, the 2-minute drive there where we allow a chunk play, we're out of structure. There's some detail in our game defensively that we're still missing, that, you know, that's going to be the big push this week, is just to tighten down some of the structural things. But I was proud of the way, you know, once the ball got down there tighter, you know, we forced them into a fourth and inches where they ran a reverse to score a touchdown. We could have been better executing on that snap, but the biggest thing on that drive was we couldn't allow them to get in the end zone in chunks. We allowed them down the field in one chunk, but I think we forced them to line up and snap it a few times, and every second that ran off the clock there got us closer to kneeling out the game. And I was so proud of the offense to go out and finish with the ball in our hands. We have not been able to do that for 3 years, and that to me was a testament to well-called game by Tim Beck and a gutty performance by our offensive line and running backs. And obviously Diego made a couple plays there too that sealed the deal for us. So a really good team win. Again, that's an explosive offense. Anytime there's 35 on the board, we're not happy with it, but we will celebrate the team win for sure.
Absolutely. Clark Lee's with us on the program. Clark, I know how excited you were for the 2023 season. Like, I knew going into the year how excited you were thinking what Vandy football was going to be able to accomplish. You guys didn't accomplish that. You won two games, didn't win an SEC game, went back to the drawing board. I'm sure it would have been a lot easier if I had told you then, hey, you're going to beat Virginia Tech, you're going to beat Alabama. But you really reinvented the program this offseason, both from a roster standpoint and a coaching standpoint. Take me through that thought process of where you decided, okay, I had these plans for what I thought we were going to be, and now I've got to take a detour here. And what led you to the road that you're on right now?
Well, the starting point, the disappointment of 23, and I feel like, I think one of the things that was hardest for me, and Jared, you know this, I didn't see that coming, you know, and that's a hard thing as a leader to experience. You want to be able to see around the corner, and I didn't do that. What we did in 22 is we improved, and I saw us go from 2 wins to 5 wins and felt like we found some competitive spirit, and we basically doubled down on everything. We also lost a couple of really competitive, leaders in Mike Wright and Anthony Orji that I think did a really nice job of balancing our locker room out. And I just, we kind of overvalued some aspects of our program and didn't do enough to really shift the mentality within. But I thought doubling down on our systems, you know, doubling down on our personnel and trying to bring as many guys back as we could was the formula to go from 5 to postseason play. And obviously I was devastated by the year and really disappointed. I think if anything hit me the hardest, it was there were games where, you know, certainly I can be critical of our systems and our structures, but man, do I want to see a competitive spirit on the field that I feel like reflects me and who I am every day. And to watch, this is the Kentucky week for us this week. A year ago against Kentucky, I felt like we had a team that, they didn't come out to compete. And, you know, you confront those things in the moment, you confront those things in the team meeting afterwards, but if you're confronting them at that point, it's too late. You know, I mean, like, again, these are things that we didn't see coming. So I learned a lot. I grew a lot from that experience. And it was a matter of me scrutinizing everything this all season to get it back on the rails of progress. Some of the roster attrition was a product of the fact that we hadn't yet established true systems for supporting the roster with NIL that reflected membership in our league. And so we left ourselves exposed there. Again, I think that's part of the evolution of our program and just the changing landscape and the shifting of the ground under our feet. You know, we just had to, adapt or we were going to lose our team. And we did that in time, and a credit to Candace and her help. And, she made some hard decisions, say we're going to open up some resources to make sure we can retain the guys we need to retain and then add to patch some of the holes that we lost. I think that was the biggest transformation that allowed us to cover some ground or make up some ground was, you know, we retained guys that we had developed over 2 and 3 years that, quite honestly, had we not stepped up financially, we probably would have lost. You know, there was a lot of communication that was going on with them, you know, and that's just the way of the world. I mean, you know, we can't be naive to that. And then beyond that, you know, once we got through that portal window and we started to get out into look for players to add, you know, when you talk about adding Zaylen Wood, like that was the first, and Zaylen's been hurt, you know, but the first call I got with a portal addition was Zaylen, and watching him play at MTSU was, man, he's so tough. He's physical. You saw him on film against Missouri. You saw him on film against Alabama. He had such a mindset that around being excited to come in and do this. You just started to realize this could be so refreshing to our program. Cordae Sidnor, Randon Fontenette. I mean, so many guys, Diego Pavia. I mean, on and on and on with these guys that we went out and found that fit the competitive profile of the program we want to build. So that was new to us. And for me, as a team builder and as someone who, you know, wants this program to be developmental in nature, it was going outside my comfort zone, but knowing that's really the only way that we're going to be able to build something that competes over time. And what I learned was that we actually, the NIL and transfer portal for Vanderbilt's an opportunity. You know, we've waited too long to participate in it, but now that we're in it, we're starting to close that gap. And my push now is to look at this coming off season when it gets here and to have the same approach that we're going to go out and find the best of the best. We'll add high school players. We'll add transfer players. We'll continue to push for more and more resources because, you know, this is a great opportunity for us to reset expectations here and really shift the narrative that surrounds the program. So Saturday night was a part of that, Jared. I mean, it was like, you know, the culmination of a lot of sacrifice and investment and sometimes some pain along the way, strategic redirections and addition of new staff and new systems. Obviously, our strength coach has been a huge addition, and that's been a huge change internally for us. And so all those things, it wasn't always easy and it wasn't always comfortable, but you know, it was a product of a group of us sitting in here and saying, okay, how do we do the next right thing the right way and find the path through?
Clark Lee is with us on the program. I know you guys got the last laugh, but I also know that you heard what Nick Saban said a couple of weeks ago about playing at Vanderbilt. And talking about somebody's fan base or their home field is kind of like calling somebody's mom or girlfriend or wife out. It's something that, you know, it might be a little personal. So I wonder, now that you guys took care of Alabama and played it on the scoreboard after the victory, what were your thoughts at the time? Because I know that if I heard the Nick Saban comments, I know you heard them. What were your thoughts at the time, and what do you feel about them now?
So, again, you're not going to believe me, but I'm going to tell you. And I don't think people understand that I am so insulated. I didn't know about those comments until I was asked about them in the post-game press conference.
Oh, come
but,
on.
You know, hey, God is my witness. Now, listen, I did know about the rat traps because they had asked me about that. You know, they had put rat traps in the building or whatever it was.
Sure.
They had brought that up in my presser on Tuesday. I'll say this. I mean, sure, like, and I'm going to be real with you because, you know, like, that's what you expect from me. It does piss me off because this is my place, man. Like, I, you know, again, I didn't hear about it before. I certainly would have put that in front of the team had I. I certainly would have brought that to everyone's attention, and I'm sure they all saw it. The team did. One of the things that's important for us, though, is, like, dude, there's so many people out there that want to say something about Vanderbilt. We can't sit here and try to fight everyone that has an opinion or wants to be negative towards our program. Like, we're going to focus on what we do and how we do it. And over time, we're going to earn the respect of the people outside. Certainly, I don't appreciate that being said. And I don't appreciate any time that our program is the butt of a joke. But it's our job to build something that's dangerous. And that's what we're doing. And I think the world found that out on Saturday. And unfortunately, it took us, you know, to Saturday to show that in a full four-quarter effort. But, you know, we need to double down on the things that got us to that point because, like I said to you earlier, there are plenty of examples of us not playing good football this season. But when we sync up and we have the right attitude and have the focus, you know, we can beat anybody. You know, I have a ton of respect for Coach Saban, though, and I'll tell you, you know, the one thing I did see – on College Game Day this weekend, just I happened to be walking in my office, and he was talking about, you know, his transition from a transactional coach to a transformational coach. I don't know if you saw that, but
I did.
He mentioned about a win that they had at Michigan State when they played at Ohio State, where he didn't think they could win, but they found a way to do it, and how that became a reset point for him in terms of how he's worked in service of the players rather than in service of himself. And like that, you know, coach has so much wisdom, and I think in his role now, you know, he probably is responsible for more sound bites than he would like to, or that he's comfortable with. But again, I got a ton of respect for him. I don't appreciate what he said. I unfortunately didn't see it in time to use it as motivation, but you know what, Jared, we didn't need it. You know, we wanted to sure. play for each other. And I think there's some strength in that too.
Clark Lee's with us. Let's say I'm an NFL general manager, or let's say I'm an NFL coach. Let's say I'm an NFL coach that maybe you spent some time with in Los Angeles. I don't know. And I picked up the phone and I called you and I said, Coach, tell me about Diego Pavia. I see all of the things he does on the field. I see how electric he is. I see how his teammates react to him. I see even in the Georgia State loss how when he's my quarterback or your quarterback, you've always got a chance. Does that translate to the NFL coach?
Well, the competitive attitude absolutely does. There's nothing about and this kid is a pro. I mean, I think the world consumes like his kind of swagger and his edge and his confidence, which is a beautiful part of who he is, and it's an important part of who he is. What I see day in, day out is someone who's so steady and consistent and dependable. He's a leader. he's a vocal leader, but he's also a guy that makes quiet connections in the corners and pulls people in to the soul of the program. You know, this dude is in the front row, every team meeting, front and center, locked into what I'm saying. After practice, when I call the team up, he's right in front of me, locked into what I'm saying. He carries my message to the team. I mean, he's up here studying film. He's a really smart player. All those things translate. And, you know, it's going to be so interesting to watch him as he continues to grow here and continues to be in big moments on a big stage, because I believe what he's doing is strengthening that resume to get the opportunity. And if he's proven this, you know, this guy was a chip on the shoulder kid from New Mexico that got passed up by the flagship university, went to junior college, earned his way to New Mexico State. You know, ended up leading that program to 10 wins, you know, comes to the SEC and now has done some monumental things here. What he's shown is that no matter where he is, if he's given the opportunity, he's going to seize it and maximize it. And I don't see why he won't do the same thing in the NFL.
Clark, how cool was it to see the hometown support? You know, you grew up here. I grew up here. I remember when you played here. You know, and to see the fans that are Vandy season ticket holders and have been Vandy season ticket holders for 40 years, and we did a two-hour special on Saturday, and we had people call in that went to the game in 1969. But to also see the 20-year-olds and carrying the goalpost all the way down Broadway and pretty much shutting the city down because of Vanderbilt won on Saturday. And how do you kind of capitalize that support of people in this town that will get behind a winner that maybe didn't go to Vanderbilt or haven't cheered for Vanderbilt in the past, and get them on board with what you're building right now?
Well, brother, that's the critical thing, is we have to seize the momentum. And, you know, I think there's marketing elements of that. And, you know, there's different things that we need to be doing out in the community right now. My focus and my piece in that is to prepare the team for Kentucky, because as significant as that win was Saturday, and as meaningful as it was in a historical context, you know, this is about the program we're building. And for that to be meaningful and significant to us, we need to build upon it and leverage it and have it amplified through the rest of the season. So we'll know more about what that win meant to us as we reflect on the back end of the year. To your point of celebrating with the Nashville community, the Vanderbilt community, that so deserves a moment like that, there's nothing that's been more meaningful to me, short of like accepting the position, than knowing that our program was responsible for the joy of so many people. And my primary concern and my primary passion is celebrating with our team and our staff and my family and all the people that sacrifice and invest so much, but you know, walking off that field and hugging with strangers and, you know, sharing expressions of love with people I don't know. Like, it's just, it's a cool thing. And then, you know, on top of that, you know, Jared, our students have shown up every game this year. I mean, yeah. I said this before, like, we're a football school now. I mean, these guys are excited about what we're putting on the field. We got to turn the rest of the stadium black and gold, but that student section has been legit. And, you know, they earned the right to have a police escort with the goalpost heading downtown. And it was a nice touch. My goal would be that eventually we get so used to these wins that, you know, we don't need to take the goalpost down. But for Saturday night, that was a special punctuation mark. And I'm so grateful and happy for the many people that shared in the victory with us. And I do believe there were people in this Nashville community that were pulling for us in that game that maybe have never been to our stadium or maybe have never really paid attention to our program, but they saw something that they liked, and hopefully it inspires them to come check us out.
By the way, somebody texted into the program and said, tell Coach, in case he's so insulated, we're underdogs this week against Kentucky. I heard you mention Kentucky about six times. I feel yeah. like I'm not going to ask you how worried you are about Kentucky, but I am going to say, how focused have you been on making sure everybody is aware of the task at hand against UK?
Yeah, so I'll tell you, man, I woke up on Sunday And it's like the disease of coaching. I tried to revel in a little more joy, and I just immediately started to get anxious about this week. And not even because, the mindset of the team, I'm not overly concerned with, just because I think these guys are so hungry for more. And I just feel like we're in a really good place right now. It's just every week, man. Every week is challenging. Kentucky is challenging. I think Kentucky has evolved and done a great job of making adjustments and adaptations. They're a tough defense. Their offense is starting to kind of sync up here. And so, it's a challenge. Man, you got to go on the road in the SEC and win a game. We're gonna have our work cut out for us. But we talked yesterday in our meetings. First of all, we took time to celebrate the win like we always do, and kind of put a bow on that. We talked about the fact that as much of a great marker it is on our journey, like a little bit of a guidepost, it shows us things that are possible that we knew were possible, we finally made happen. That really the meaning of it has to be about how we leverage it and how we carry it forward. So, and then once we finished our practice, I said internally, anything that's not a conversation about Kentucky, I reject. We reject. Mm-hmm. We burned the Alabama game and released it to our past. We're going to be respectful of people who want to congratulate us, respectful of people who want to share their story or their piece of it. But, we let that go in one ear and out the other, and we're focused on playing our best this weekend, which we'll need to, because Mark's a great coach, and that program is like the signature of a builder. I mean, he's kept it, he's built it to competitive. He's kept it competitive, and they'll remember the last time we went up there, right? That was 22. I'm sure he's talking about that. We're going to have to be super focused and play our best ball.
Coach, last one for you. How much joy did you get out of watching Tennessee lose to Arkansas? I'm kidding on that one. Coach, congratulations on what was a great win, and I can already tell how looking forward to Kentucky you are, and I really appreciate you cutting us into your busy schedule with all the requests I'm sure you're getting. And most importantly, congratulations to you, because I know this is not something that just happened on Saturday, and I know how much thought you put into everything you do, and I appreciate it. Congratulations and good luck going forward.
You're the man, partner. I appreciate you. Good to be with you.
Yep, as always, Clark Lee joining us on the program. And again, that guy, I mean, it's funny because he brought up the Nick Saban thing. And I was listening to that on College Game Day, where Nick Saban said, when I was coaching, I actually almost texted Derek about this, because this might have been when Derek was there. And Nick Saban was like, when I was coaching at Michigan State, they wanted to fire my ass. And I got out there in a game that I didn't think we had any chance of winning, and we won, and it totally changed how I coached football. And I heard that, and then after seeing what happened with Clark, and I know how Clark coaches football, I absolutely thought about that as, kind of these turning points and where they've come from in order to get to this point. All right, 615-737-1025, more of your phones, 615-737-1025, plus Clark said something. He says, I'm not going to believe it. I'm not sure I do. We'll get to that next. Stillman & Company, 1025, 106 for the game.
I mean, when we played at Tennessee a couple years ago and got beat up there, that was about as wild a situation as you're ever going to get in. Huh. But the only place you play in the SEC that's not hard to play is Vanderbilt. Because when you play at Vanderbilt, you have more fans there than they have. And that's no disrespect to them. It's just the truth.
Hey,
when we played in Nashville, we had more fans, Alabama fans, than what they had Vanderbilt fans.
That was Nick Saban 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, however you want to – really 2.5 weeks ago, however you want to slice it. It was two game weeks ago, because it was before Tennessee, Oklahoma. And he said to Pat McAfee, everywhere is hard to play in the SEC except for Vanderbilt, because we bring more fans than they do. And you heard the crew laughing and all that. So I asked Clark when he was on the show, I said, what did you make of Saban's comments when you heard them? And what do you think of them now? Because Vanderbilt got the last laugh. I mean, Vanderbilt was putting it up on the Jumbotron. They put a video out on social media. And let me say this. I already DVR College Game Day every week, but I cannot wait until we hear the flack Saban is going to get from the crew on College Game Day, specifically McAfee, but from I hope they don't ask him about it on McAfee on Friday. I hope they wait until game day because I want to hear everybody get into him. Herbie, if you're driving around right now and you're listening and you're getting ready for your NFL game on Thursday, which looks like it might be pretty good. Now, Herbie, if you're listening, grill his ass. Grill his rear end on Saturday about the Vandy comments. And I know in my heart, because I've been around a guy like Nick Saban, who's very good friends with Nick Saban, which is why I think I'm friends with Nick Saban. I know it just burns Saban right in his keister that he said something that could have been used as motivation. Now, Clark says he didn't see it. He says that if he did, he's like, I totally would have used that as motivation. But he says he didn't see it. Ian, do you believe that Clark Lee did not hear the Nick Saban comments until after the game on Saturday?
I think I do, yeah. He was pretty convincing in the interview there.
So
he's not a BSer.
I'm torn. I know. I'm kind of torn, which makes me think that Clark might need somebody in his life. He's got a good PR staff. PR staff at Vanderbilt's very good.
That is a good point the intern has just made. It was not the week before the game.
That's true. It was before the UT-Oklahoma game.
It was a week before, so this is not like leading up directly.
But we heard it. Like, we played it on the show, and we talked about, you know, oh, man, you know, that's kind of funny, but it's also kind of, you know?
Yeah, but these coaches have tunnel vision. We know that in this season.
It sounds to me, and a lot of dudes that are in powerful positions have this, where people don't want, like, maybe Clark doesn't have somebody in his aura who sends him that stuff because, you know, Clark's getting ready. He's dealing, I think it was the week before the Missouri game. He's worried about Missouri. He's got his own crap to worry about. He's not, I don't want to be the one that brings this to him that gets him all worked up. So, Ian, I'm thinking that I might have to appoint myself.
What's that?
The bad news, Clark Lee.
So you have yourself a new position?
Yeah. I might have to do it.
Is this like a paid position?
I might have to do it.
Pro bono?
Let me say this. A pro bono. I don't want there to be any. Look, I grew up a Vanderbilt fan. I'm not a humongous Vanderbilt fan. I actually consider myself more of a Clark fan because, I mean, I sat with him for like an hour before he'd even coached a game. Off the record, again, it was in the middle of a celebrity softball game I was playing and he was coaching. And I was just magnetized to this guy. And I'm like, this guy, I don't know if he can do it at Vandy because it's so hard to do it at Vandy, and everybody knows that. And I don't know. But I'm like, if anybody can, it's this guy. And when it didn't work out last year, with all the excitement they had going into the season, I thought to myself, like, gosh, I know he's a good man. I think he's a good coach. They got an incredibly hard schedule. It's going to be so hard for Vandy, you know, for them to justify, you know, 4 years, no bowl game. Now it's fine. Now he's in the clear because he beat Alabama. They could lose every game the rest of the year. It doesn't matter. He beat Alabama. He'll keep his job. But I knew he was a good coach. Somebody says in the YouTube chat, he swore to God literally. I'm like, that is true. He did swear to God. How could he have not heard that? But I will say this, the one thing that I think he kind of hinted at there, and if I had had more time, I would have asked him this, but like I was watching MSNBC this morning, and they were breaking down the game. Like they had Paul Feinbaum on. This is the middle of a presidential election, and they are putting Paul Feinbaum on MSNBC to talk about Vanderbilt's win. Like at some point, I think there has to be a little bit of this that's like, hey man, like, yeah, it was a great win, and we're really proud, and it was fun, and it was, but, like, we're a football team too now. This isn't like the school of the blind beat Alabama. Like, okay, I got it. I know we haven't been good in the past, but, and I wonder where that kind of rubber meeting the road is, and he said, hey, it pissed me off. Because talking about somebody's fan base and somebody's stadium, that's like talking about their mom. That's like, look, if your mom's 350 pounds, you know it, you don't want to hear somebody else talking about it. And that's what talking about somebody else's stadium. And I'm not saying Saban was wrong or Saban should have said it. But I, you know, it is personal when you do that. And so Clark said he didn't hear it. Somebody's got, The next time something rises to that, we will make Clark aware of it. Ryan in Nashville says, what would Floyd think of Vanderbilt's upset? I know he's looking down from heaven, smiling and laughing and applauding Clark Lee. I don't know what Floyd would have said about it. Nobody crapped on Vanderbilt over the years more than Floyd Reese.
It would have to do something with Saban not being at Alabama anymore, probably.
Yeah. But then I would have said, but Saban's the one giving them bulletin board material.
Yeah, no, that doesn't, it's not, no. Well, what bulletin board material? Coach didn't hear it.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Floyd would have said that after the fact, after Clark came on the show and said that.
That's still the coach's job, Kalen DeBoer's, to, you know, weed out the rat poison. And that's what made Nick Saban great at Alabama, being able to not overlook a single opponent week after week.
Well, that's why he'd get up at the media and yell at him.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it was Charleston Southern or Georgia Southern or somebody who they played that ran the option. And Saban was like, I mean, you guys don't remember it, but they came down here. We had a team that every single one of those guys played in the NFL. I think four or five of them were first-round draft choices. And they ran through our ass like, you know what, through a tin horn, man.
So,
and
I think, yeah.
He went crazy about it. But
I think there's some fans that probably take that for granted.
It does sound like I kept saying when Vandy United launched, with the money and the facilities and the things they were going to do, I kept saying, I'll believe it when I see shovels in the ground. Because for years I had been told that Vanderbilt was going to update the stadium only to see them never do it. Now, obviously, it's in the middle of a construction zone. That's why they're doing it. I think the reason Floyd was so put off by Vandy was because when he was GM of the Oilers, they played that year at Vanderbilt Stadium. They offered to renovate the locker rooms, you know, to make them NFL locker rooms, and basically said, we're going to renovate the locker rooms, and then when we're done at the end of the year, you guys can have them, and you'll have an NFL locker room. And Vanderbilt said to the Oilers, no, thank you, we're good. And I think he never, got over that. And in fairness, like, he hasn't lived through this era of Vanderbilt, where they are spending money. Clark alluded to it. He's like, we got in the game late on NIL. Joe said it, and we played the cut, and we tried to figure it out, and I have figured it out. But apparently Joe said that Vandy had – Ian, you remember this. Joe said Vandy had legit NIL money in the middle of last year, and he said it was a famous sports family, and we were trying to guess
who
the famous sports family was.
Yeah.
Do you know who the famous sports family is, by the way?
I do not know.
So I may or may not. But all I'll say is it sounds like Clark Lee was able to look at Diego Pavia and say, I want him. I want him.
Just like Jerry.
And somehow got him. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Speaking of Diego Pavia, there's a thought that went through my mind that part of me says, Jared, please. And part of me says, no, no, no. This is legit. The internal conflict that I'm having, that some of you are going to be really mad about this, but I'm just going to tell you how I feel. We'll do it next. Stone & Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.